All right, welcome back to Film Shake, episode 4.5 on Ikiru. This is our spoilers episode. I'm Jordan.
And I'm Nick.
Nick, good to have you back with us. So, guys, if y'all haven't listened to the spoiler-free episode on Ikiru, go check that out. Go watch the movie if you haven't already. But then
it's
come on
good.
Back. Yeah, it's pretty good. Yeah. Come on back, listen to this episode as we're going to get into the final parts of the film. Before we do that, we're going to have our Eye of the Duck segment that we always do. So here we talk about the key scene of the film. If you want to know what Eye of the Duck means, go back and listen to previous episodes.
If we could, if we deconstruct it anymore,
it's just going to fall apart.
That's right.
So it's, Eye of the Duck. Go Google Eye of the Duck, David Lynch. All right. So this is where we talk about the key scenes of the film. And Nick, I think mine comes before yours.
Yes, you go first.
I'll go first. There's a scene, and we talked a little bit about it on the previous episode, but there's a scene where Takashi Shimura, again, he plays this middle-aged bureaucrat who has been diagnosed with stomach cancer. And so for most of the film, he is trying to grasp at straws to live again, you know, to live pretty much for the first time. He's spent like 30 years just of a wasted life working this job that is pretty much meaningless, and he has really no family connections anymore to speak of. So he meets this young girl from his job, and he kind of forms a relationship with her where she's very young and energetic and full of life. So he's kind of developed this habit of, you know, engaging her to trying to get her to go out with him on the town and, you know, go out to restaurants and do different things and just kind of live it up and spend some money while he's still alive before he dies. So their relationship kind of builds and builds until she's kind of sick of him and creeped out by him and doesn't really want anything to do with him, but finally convinces him to go out one last time with him. So that scene is what I want to talk about, where they're at this restaurant or tea house having this whole conversation across the table. And then when he kind of gets worked up and talking about all of this, he goes onto her side of the table and sits right next to her, and her face is just appalled. She's disgusted and just kind of creeped out, wondering what he wants. He's already realized that he needs something more to bring meaning to his life, but he's thinking that she is the meaning, that she can give him what he needs. But I think he's finally kind of coming to terms that that's not the case either, and is asking her, like, where do you get this energy from? Where do you, you know, how are you so full of life? And she responds, I just work and eat, and I make these little bunnies at this factory or whatever, and I enjoy doing that because I feel like I am making every little child in Japan laugh with these little mechanical bunny toys. And so she says, maybe you can make something too. I don't know what you could do or whatever. And at that point, he's kind of sullen. He doesn't really know what to do, like what he could make, and, you know, his head's down as usual, just kind of bent over in his kind of depressed state.
His general posture.
I'm like, yeah, man, this dude needs to go to the chiropractor, get his spine straightened or something. He's just beat down by life. But yeah, then he has this epiphany of what he can do and how he needs to work up. You know, he says, I know what I can do if only I can find the will to do it. And so he runs out of the restaurant. He's descending these stairs, and there's this whole like chorus of young Japanese boys and girls on the balcony singing happy birthday to someone off screen. But it's very much framed as if they're singing it for him. And so the metaphor or symbol there is, oh, he's had this like, you know, awakening or this new birth where he's going to finally like find meaning in his life. And to me, that was just such a well-orchestrated scene, especially like we both didn't really get the happy birthday thing later until we read about it. But now looking back on it, it is kind of on the nose and just right there in front of you. But I think it's just a testament to Kurosawa.
It's the purloin letter. It was hidden in plain sight.
It's hidden in plain sight, right. Because you're just kind of shocked for a minute there. Like, why are they singing happy birthday to him? Because it seems like they're singing it to him. And then it's revealed, okay, it's somebody else. All right, that makes sense. But deeper underneath, it's like, oh, this is his moment where he's finally like coming alive. So the whole film kind of revolves around him trying to come alive and find purpose in his life. And that for me is the key scene where he finds it, and it's kind of like a climactic moment, especially within the relationship with that girl in the film. So,
yes, and then from there, you know, we have the big flash forward that we've talked about. Flash forward 6 months, he's dead.
He's dead.
We're at his funeral. People are gathered around, kind of talking about him, but unfortunately, there are a lot of bureaucrats and some upper-level bureaucrats who are trying to kind of take credit for the accomplishments he's made in the 6 months, these last 6 months of his life, which is initially tragic, and you kind of get the worry there, he's not going to get credit for what he did. No one is going to realize his great contribution because he's had really no meaning up to this point in his life. He's just sat in a chair and passed people on. Whenever he looks for meaning, he almost thinks in this last relationship with this young girl, it's very codependent, you know, very leech-like. He's just going to suck the life out of her. And then he realizes he can't just find meaning in another person. He actually has to do something. He has to, in this sense, contribute to society.
Right.
Which he does. He has this park built. And we see in these flashbacks, it's built because of his persistence. He won't give up on it. He gets in every upper-level bureaucrat's face and won't leave them alone.
Right.
Whenever the Yakuza comes to kind of try to scare him away, he's not afraid of them. He knows he's going to die.
He's got nothing to lose, right?
Exactly. They can't touch him. But then at his funeral, other people are trying to kind of snipe him off of this kind of lofty perch he could possibly be put upon as actually making a difference in the community. And all of a sudden, when it looks like, okay, he's just going to get pushed under the rug, mourners, actual mourners who have seen his contribution and who were asking for the park that was eventually built come. And they're weeping and their grief is very real because they know that he was a hero.
Right.
That Kanji spent his last moments of life making this park for them out of this place that was once a cesspool where, you know, their children can play. He made a huge contribution. And there's a picture of him in the background.
Yeah, so, which is in almost every shot of that scene.
That's right. And it's really a... He does these cuts where he shows it from a distance, and then he cuts into a middle shot, then he cuts in for a close-up.
Right.
So as I was watching, I thought, oh, this is the eye of the duck, because we're getting this reevaluation of this person who was sort of a nothing, who's now become great due to his selfless actions and his contribution. But then something else happens with the picture later that carried it over the top for me to where Kanji is kind of transcended into almost this mystical heroic role.
Right.
And it's, of course, involving his final moments of life. He goes out to the park on a very cold night.
In the snow.
That's right, in the snow, which, you know, it's famous enough to where it's on some of the posters for the film.
Right. It's a very iconic moment.
Shown in a much more joyous light. You wouldn't think, oh, he's about to die on this swing.
This is the saddest moment in cinema history. Oh, wait.
That's right.
Yeah.
Well, he's singing a sad song and swinging, and a policeman walks by. And this policeman comes to the funeral because, you know, we're cutting back and forth between the flashbacks and actual footage of people at the funeral, which is the present.
Mm-hmm.
And the policeman comes, and he takes the blame because no one knows that he was dying of cancer. He thinks that he just froze to death because... The policeman thinks this because of his own negligence. Kanji has died because he heard him singing out there in the cold, and he should have made him go home.
Right.
And he says that he was frozen, though, because he heard the song, and then it cuts from him singing, and we have the synchronous, non-synchronous audio where we're still hearing him sing.
Mm-hmm.
And then we see his picture, and clearly the focus is on his picture over the policeman's shoulder as he's talking. And he says, "The song filled the depths of my soul."
Right.
And you kind of see here that his contribution has been even bigger than just making the park. He's maybe causing a change in, you know, in other people's souls, maybe making them want to be better.
Yeah.
But then we get this last Kurosawa. It was funny to me. We discussed in the non-spoiler show how I found this to be more of a comedy than you did.
Yeah.
So... All the bureaucrats get so pumped up and so excited. Yeah, they get wasted. I'm gonna live for Kanji. I'm gonna do like he did. I'm gonna follow his example. And then they get a chance to. We cut back to the bureaucratic office a few days later, and everyone is back at work who was previously at the funeral, jokingly boasting about how they're gonna do good now, just like the now departed Kanji. and they immediately fall back into bureaucratic lockstep and don't help people. And it's a very cynical ending in that fashion. It's uplifting in that we see that one person can make a difference.
And we do have the one bureaucrat who's at the funeral. They kind of stand, you know, he's the whole time the one being a little bit more sincere and standing up for Kanji's memory. And he does stand up, and you know, at that very end scene where they're just going to pass the people off again, he stands up for a moment to try and kind of like challenge authority, but then he sits right back
down.
Right. And then I love how the camera just pans down to like the stacks of paper just cover him up, so he's just totally erased by bureaucracy.
It was just like that shot in Brazil where Terry Gilliam's Brazil, where Robert De Niro literally gets eaten by paperwork. You know, the papers just swallow the frame. And you know, it's also a clear callback whenever he stands up like he's going to make a difference. And we see Kanji doing that earlier in the film, but he doesn't sit back down. He just stands there with those huge, dopey puppy dog eyes. And it's clear he's not going to move from that spot.
Right.
But unfortunately, this other bureaucrat who was most fired up by his example, he just can't follow through. He could have stood there and not given ground, but he turns around and goes back to his paper-laden desk.
It's pretty cynical in that respect, where it ends with, you know, them claiming they're going to make a change and they're affected by his life and what he did. But when it push comes to shove, they just kind of fall right back into their routines. And you know, that brief moment of challenge and then just kind of giving in under the pressure of society expectations and whatnot. So I felt like it rang true in that sense, though, you know, because I don't know, you know, maybe it's the cynic in me is like, yeah, that's how it really is, you know, because a more like quote unquote Hollywood movie version would be like the young upstart who is inspired by Kenji's life. And then he goes on to like make this big difference or whatever. But I don't know, it felt, I guess, poetic in a way that it ended with a little bit of that cynicism, you know, and just more realistic. So, but we do have a shot right after that where that same bureaucrat from that stands up to like briefly challenge, I think his name was Noguchi. He is on an overpass, dressed in a hat and an overcoat, somewhat symbolizing or like his silhouette later kind of reminded me of Kanji. So I don't know if there was like a callback there in his dress, but he's looking at the playground. Mm-hmm. He's looking from above at the playground where Kanji built the park where he built, and there's children playing. And we do get to see like, you know, the after effects of all Kanji's work with the playground. And a mother calls two boys off the swings, and so we have this awesome shot of just the empty swings going back and forth, which I thought for sure was just going to be the last, you know, the last shot, and very like symbolic of like death and now like the swinging empty swing, you know, and everything. But then it pans back up to Noguchi walking across the overpass, and like he keeps going past the park. So what did you make of that last shot? Because I went back and watched it a couple times. It was a little unclear to me, again, like that was the same actor. I was like, oh, wait, that's Noguchi, the guy that stood up. He's at the park now. And then he just kind of walks off and it ends. So what was your take or your interpretation of that final shot?
I believe, and I could be wrong, I think that's the first real clear shot of the sky. There's a shot earlier, it's a sunset, and Kanji is there, and, you know, obviously it's kind of metaphorical, the sun is setting on his life,
right.
You know, the sun is about to set and he's about to die.
But he also said, that's the scene where he also says, I don't have time to appreciate this, like, I don't have much time left in my life, right? That's a flashback.
You're right.
They use that as an example to prove, like, he knew that he was going to die. And he stops and he's like, oh, this is the first time I've stopped and looked at the sunset in 30 years, but never mind, I don't have time.
Yeah, it's too late for him to appreciate that kind of thing. He can make a difference, but it's too late for him to, you know, enjoy life in the way that he should have. But here we get kind of an unbroken shot of the sky, which I don't think there was before up to this point. There's sort of an oppressive feel with a lot of the other shots. Not that it's an oppressive film.
Yeah.
But, you know, bureaucracy and kind of a critique of it is at the heart of this.
Oh, yeah.
And there, it's almost like Kanji has brought this freedom this open sky, and the sun isn't setting yet on her. It's a blue open sky, and maybe, just maybe, this guy could follow in his footsteps and live a life that makes a difference. And there's, right, you know, a long time before his sun is going to set.
Yeah.
Maybe he'll even get to enjoy the sunset.
True. So there's a little hope there, maybe, you know, even though it's not spelled out. Like, he doesn't stand up in that moment in the, you know, in the bureaucratic system, but here he is reflecting on the park that Kanji made, and he's at least, like, the only one with a conscience that seems to be really, truly affected by what Kanji did. He's stopping to reflect on the park. So it's ambiguous, like, where he's going to go from there. But I like that. I like that it's not spelled out and that it's not hammered away that, like, Kanji made this big change in this person's life and then he's going to go on and do these other things and, you know, be so radical and extreme within the city departments or whatever. I like that it's just kind of, like, left for us to ponder.
Yeah, it's very poetic, cinematic storytelling.
Right.
Again, I like what you said about it, a modern America film. For some reason, I'm thinking of The Emperor's Club with Kevin Kline. I don't know why. I can't even remember what happens at the end of that. But, you know, everything does change positively, maybe in a more mainstream modern America film, and you don't get these kind of poetics. You get maybe a happy montage of everyone being happy forever and ever, which isn't the case here. The bureaucracy, yeah, you know, is still there. It's still functioning the way it was before Kanji passed away, but maybe, just maybe, now his example is going to lead to other people making a difference.
And we do have to think about the historical aspect of when this film was made too, in 50s Japan, like post-war Japan. So it's definitely a critique of, you know, the bureaucratic system in post-war Japan. So, and as we've seen with Dreams, where Kurosawa is just leaving us a pointed message about the state of things in the world and, like, what needs to change, here I wonder, too, if instead of leaving us with a happy-go-lucky ending, the cynicism or the state of things still being the same at the end of the film is in a way, a call to action, too. You know, this is still here. This hasn't been, obviously, you know, like, we haven't overturned the government or yeah, changed bureaucracy, you know? So it's not like he can really say, oh yes, we fought this fight and we won, because historically he's still living in that moment, you know, in Japan in the 50s. So
that's right. In a way, that's a lot more inspirational.
Because, exactly,
you know, in the kind of cheesy mainstream film way that we're talking about, where everything is resolved and there's a happy montage, you could leave the film saying, oh, well, everything's okay now, which some people just watch movies for that one feeling to be achieved, but he's going for something deeper here. He's trying to maybe inspire you, which,
yeah, there's a deeper figure. Yeah, there's a deeper social message. So I think, yeah, you're right, it's more inspiring to, like, leave it there, and obviously, like, this one little glimmer of hope has been shown in, like, this dying man's wish being granted to make this park, and how he kind of transcended his own personal, you know, well-being to just do this for the greater good. So there's definitely, like, a message there. But I think it's just more realistic overall that it leaves you with a little bit of that worldly cynicism. So I liked it. Again, gave this 4.5 out of 5. Really, really strong from a great master of cinema.
Yep, 9 out of 10 from me. I enjoyed watching two Kurosawa films that I hadn't seen yet. This was great.
Yes, indeed. So next time we're going to get into Ozu. We're going to do two films by Ozu, just like we've done two by Kurosawa and Mizoguchi. So, Nick, what are we getting into next time? You told us before, but let's hear it again.
We're getting into Late Spring.
Great film. One of my favorites by Ozu, starring a really beautiful and enigmatic Setsuko Hara. She's just wonderful in it. So check us out next time for a spoiler-free review of that film, and we'll also have a spoiler show on it as well if you care to watch it and just listen to both episodes. Why not? Just go full Monty.
Go nuts.
Go nuts.
Take it off.
All right. So, yeah, thanks for listening. We'll see you next time for more Film Shake.
Take it easy. Take it off.
Take it off. Take it out. Take out the trash. Just turn off the show.
Turn these mics off.
Turn it off.